Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC football.
Let's go.
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast presented by Ingles, the official supermarket of Gramlich and McLean. Mac, it's time to recap the NFL draft that happened over the weekend and talk about where all these ACC guys went. We have Jim Nagy on the pod, who's the executive director of the Senior Bowl. He's the best. I'm so excited for you guys to hear his insight because there's just very few people that you can get this type of insight from. So we will get to that interview and then we'll talk a bit more, Mac, about some of these other guys on the back end. But I know you were locked into the draft this weekend, my friend.
I was. I always love seeing it because it is a it's such an impactful thing, right? Good or bad, one way or the other, it's life-changing. Right. And, you know, it's an awesome time for these families. You see all these stories. And my favorite thing, though, KG, is the awkward shots of the mama and the girlfriend at the house. Where the mom's, like, stiff-arming the girlfriend, like, get out of here. Like, you are not engaged. Get out of here. Or like the girlfriend's like overly whatever. It's so funny. Those are my favorite clips.
Mac, do you know that I used to not really have an opinion on this situation, right? I'd be like, oh, that's funny, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Now, as a boy mom, I'm like, get the heck out of here. You may have known my son for 2-3 years. I birthed this baby. I carried it for 10 months. I'm getting the first hug. Yes. Get out.
Yes. All right. Lay out the living room for us. Fast forward however many years that is, 22 years-ish, and Jacob is sitting on the couch about to get drafted. What's the layout? Like, how far away is the girlfriend from Jacob at that time?
Mac, honestly, no ring, no couch. You know what I mean? Like, if we're not at that point, you could be gone tomorrow.
That's right.
Why are you out here trying to get the first hug? That's outrageous.
I can see that on a t-shirt.
No KG ring, no space, couch.
No ring, no couch. Get out
it's
of
not
here.
Happening. That's my baby. Okay.
I love that. Mamas, if you're
that's
listening,
not happening.
No ring, mm-hmm. no couch. Get them out of there.
Get them out. Exactly, Mac. Now, my other favorite part of the draft was some of the interviews in the war room, specifically, or in the draft room, when Laura Rutledge asked this mama, she said, how far have you come? And the mom said, we came from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
And you know
what?
Yes, ma'am, you
she
did.
She answered the question.
Yes, ma'am, you did. Yes, ma'am.
She answered and then the question. I can't fault her.
Laura asked the family to say Duval, and they said, what's that? What is Duval?
Laura was so out there fighting funny. For her life.
She was fighting. She was swimming. It was tough. She did a great job. Everybody did a great job. The coverage is just insane. My brother EJ Manuel was out there with SiriusXM. It's a marathon. I can't really. I mean, like the first round, relatively easy. You know, it's fun. Everybody's excited. A lot of money going around. Second and third, okay, you got to dig a little bit more. There's some more names. That last day, that Saturday. That is a marathon. That is insane.
Yes.
And again, from a player's perspective, just sitting there all day, not hearing your name called sucks. But for those guys working and like having to know all those details. And honestly, I'm not saying I'm sure everybody works hard, but some of those, they're probably just pulling stuff. Like, what can I say about this person?
Oh, yeah.
How can I say anything? Yeah. I've never even heard of this dude.
Great
he just
family.
Got drafted. Yeah, great family,
great
character,
kid.
And this dude like has horrible issues. No one knows. Like it's like whatever.
Okay. Wait, Mac. I need to ask you one more question before we talk about our great friends at Ingles, and then we get to Jim. I cannot understand going out there and standing in the middle of 100,000 people for the NFL draft. Like you would never find me out there. These people are in a mass of like you'd think that. Yeah. Taylor or someone is playing a concert, but no, it's just people selecting names. Like, why are you showing, why are hundreds of thousands of people standing in the middle of the street just to watch some former player who can't even read the name right say the name. Like, I did not understand that, Mac.
KG, that's because you are not an NFL fan. Let me ask you this. If it was a Taylor Swift concert and it was free, you would show up, right? All 3 days. You would be there in the middle.
I guess it is free, technically. That's a good point that I did not think about.
Listen, 725,000 people standing there all night. They're there.
That's outrageous. That's outrageous. It's not free because I know you're spending a lot of money on beer, so it is not
free. That's right. That's right. Crazy. That's why the NFL has the best fans. That's why those numbers are astronomical for everything that they do. So anyway, what else is going to be astronomical is the numbers on this podcast because of our friend Jim joining us from the Senior Bowl. You already introduced him, KG. Cannot wait for you guys to hear this conversation. But quickly, a message from our friends over at Ingles. Really appreciate all their support. We've got some great things coming down the pipeline. Here's a quick message from Ingles, then we'll get to Jim.
Did you know Ingles only sells USDA Choice and Prime cuts of meat? Maybe it's time to reward yourself. Our butchers cut all our meat fresh in the store every day. Grass-fed, organic, you name it. Not only that, we'll even cut it to order just the way you like it. And we grind meat fresh in the store multiple times a day. It's all in the bag. That's the best meat in town for the best folks in town. Ingles. Low prices. Love the savings.
Jim, welcome back to the podcast, brother. Always great to see you. The draft just happened. You're in Michigan. We're at home. Everybody's talking and trying to figure out what the heck just happened. And I want to start here because we're going to dive into a lot of different ACC things, your point of view when you used to be in those war rooms, things of that nature. But the biggest thing to me, round one, six quarterbacks. And you got to help me. You got to help me here because I'm looking at some of those cats. I'm just like, what the heck just happened? Why did they go so high? So welcome to the podcast. Let's talk quarterbacks.
Eric, Kelly, great to be on. Yes, I'm in Michigan, and more specifically, I'm in my mom and dad's basement right
Love
now.
Love it.
I'm that guy. I am in my mom's basement right now. So, the quarterback thing, man, all I can say is, like, I think all six of those guys are good players and have a chance to be solid starters or better. But I think where there's the run, we're seeing so much turnover at the coach and GM level that they all want to take their shot. And that's coming from a guy. I spent 4 years with the Kansas City Chiefs and we never took a shot. And then we got shown the door and then they bring in Andy Reid. And 2 years later, they draft Mahomes. Like, if you're with an organization and you're sitting in the big boy chair and you've got a quarterback you think you can win games with, you and you don't have one on the roster currently, you got to take your shot.
Right. Right. Well, and that makes total sense to me. Was the Penix piece confusing to you? Because I do like it. I like it from a sense that I think that he's going to be able to take a step. And I think that Penix is going to be able to be a guy that can really develop into something bigger than what he is right now. And he's not forced into action, right? He can take his time. But at eight, that seemed a little bit crazy to me. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll say this. His floor was the Raiders. Just talking to buddies around the league, like, that was the prevailing feeling in the week leading up to the draft. Like, everybody said, like, he ain't getting past the Raiders, whatever pick that was, 13 or 14 or whatever. So, like, yeah, you took him eight. It seems a little rich to most people, but what's five or six spots? You know, you certainly can't trade back. Now you're playing, if you really like him, now you're just playing with fire. Like, five or six spots, who gives a rip? Let's take the guy we like and go forward with it. Now, I understand why there's been some questioning of, you know, like how they brought Kirk Cousins into the loop at the last minute. And I get some of the second guessing, but I will say this about, you know, in defense of like Terry Fontenot and Kyle Smith and those guys in the front office, we give so much lip service to the quarterback is the most important position in football, right?
Yeah.
Like, we all say that. We all talk about it. Quarterback's so important. And then you don't see teams put a lot of resources into it. So they doubled down. You know what? Kirk Cousins benefited at the beginning of his career when Washington doubled down with him. Now he's kind of facing the other end of it. I'll go back. Like, I wasn't in Seattle when they drafted Russell Wilson. I came the next year. But, you know, they had paid Matt Flynn a monster contract from Green Bay to bring him over in the offseason. And they kind of doubled down with Russ in the third round. And they get to the preseason. And Russ, I was the victim of it. He lit us up in Kansas City, man. It was the third preseason game. Russell was like 32 of 35 for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. It was insane. And at that point, Pete Carroll had no choice but to freaking start this guy, right? even though he paid Matt Flynn crazy money. So they felt like they had a young quarterback. They felt like with Kirk Cousins, they're going to win enough games where they're not drafting in the top 10 ever again. At least they hope not. So they took their shot, and I know it was kind of the talk of draft weekend. But I'm not going to sit here and be overly critical of it.
Well, it's a great point because we've seen, you know, how many star quarterbacks get hurt every single season, and then you're down to so-and-so, and then sure. You're picking up Joe Flacco off the street or whatever. So might as well have a guy like Penix right there ready to go. I totally understand it. Speaking from a quarterback perspective, we all knew Caleb Williams was going one. I think there was some discussion of Jaden Daniels or Drake May, but I think a lot of people thought it was Jaden number two. Why? Two questions. Why was Drake the third quarterback pick, just in general, from a kind of skill set standpoint? And then what do you think of his fit with the Patriots?
Why was he the third above the other guys, or why was he the third below Jaden Daniels?
Below Daniels and Williams, because, and you and I, we were talking about this off air, the mock draft from August gets a lot of people looking. And I know throughout the whole process, we knew Drake was probably going to be third, but this was a guy who was talked about as a potential number one overall pick. So in your opinion, why do you think he fell? I mean, you can't really fall to number three overall, but why do you think that happened?
Well, I do think his 2022 tape was a little better. You know, I think he didn't play quite as well. He forced the issue some this year. He had to force the issue sometimes, but I just think, you know, knowing Dan Quinn and being in Seattle with Dan and knowing Adam Peters, the GM in Washington, I was with him for a long time in New England, but especially Dan is a defensive coordinator and a guy with a defensive mind. He was probably thinking to himself, like, which one of these two quarterbacks would I be more scared of? Mm. And which guy would keep me up more at night? And it's probably Jaden Daniels, just because of the running element. I'm really biased here. I was in the press box when LSU went on the road to Tuscaloosa, and I'm telling you, like, he was like a wet noodle that night. They couldn't get their hands on him. Like, he's going through, you know, the first and second levels, and then he's out in space and he's outrunning the Alabama DBs. Like, it was crazy. It was a crazy performance. And then it was like the next week or the week after that, Florida comes into Baton Rouge and he does something no college quarterback has ever done. He threw for 300 and ran for 200 in a game. Like, that dual threat element, I think Dan Quinn was like, you know what? I'd rather have this guy on my team and have him keep other people up at night than have him keep me up if we ever get him on the schedule. So I don't think that's a knock on Drake. I think Jaden just – I thought Jaden, and I was on the record over the summer saying I thought Jaden was the most improved quarterback in 2022. And then he came back and he made another big jump in 2023. So, yeah, he wasn't talked about in that, you know, along with Drake and Caleb over the summer. But he just, Jaden just kept getting better. But I love the fit in New England. I mean, again, it's a new regime up there. They're starting anew with Elliot Wolf is the, you know, de facto GM. They haven't given him the title, but that's what he is. He made all the picks. So he's the guy that makes the picks is the GM, in my opinion. And then he's got, you know, he's got Gerard Mayo is the first year head coach. So they're moving forward together. The three of them, the three most important people in the organization are moving forward together. They drafted two receivers that should be able to get on the field next year. Now it's all about supporting Drake. But again, just being up there in New England, he's a big dude. He's got big, you know, big hands. He's a big man. He's not going to get hurt. They're going to be playing in crappy weather. He's built for that, man. And what I would say the most is Boston living up the, you know, living that for all the years I did, like a lot of typical I-95 fan bases. He is, it can be tough. It can be tough up there. And I played a round of golf down here in Mobile with Drake it was after the Senior Bowl. It was like myself, Sam Howell, Drake. He's perfectly wired to be in a big market, whether it's New York, Boston. Like, you've met the guy, you've spent time around him. Like, everything just rolls off this kid.
Right.
You know, like, and I'm a believer that you can find a lot about a person on a golf course. And, and Drake is just like, he is not going to get, it is going to be bumpy, right? Like, it's not going to be perfect. He's going to have his rough patches. He's going to. But he's going to be able to weather that storm. He's not going to lose confidence. He's not. Like, that's my belief being around the kid as little as I have been, but I felt like I got a pretty good feel for the guy. I think he's a good fit for that market.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. And you talk about the new regime coming in. I mean, what a great opportunity for everybody involved to, you know, have a blank slate and to have your guy, have your quarterback and who you feel really good about. How about expectation wise for just, we'll say all these rookie quarterbacks and some that will be starters quicker than others. How do you manage that? How do you control that? Because there's going to be so much outside noise, especially for some where you don't make the playoffs, you're a bust. You don't do this and that, you're a bust. How do you manage that to get the most out of these guys?
Well, I'll say this, for if we're just keeping it in the Drake conversation, I think he's in a good spot because he's not following Tom Brady, right? Mac Jones went up there, went to the Pro Bowl his rookie year and had a good year, and then things really fell apart. And Mac took a lot from the fan base, right? And then, you know, Bailey Zappi was thrown in there. So, like, someone else has already failed, you know, post Tom Brady. There's been someone that's failed in that. You know, like, I think Kalen DeBoer is going to do great, but like following up Saban's a pretty tough gig. So there's that. But it is nice that they're all kind of moving forward on the same page together. I would expect Jacoby Brissett to be out there week one. I really would. I think, and again, I was talking to Drake's quarterbacks coach the other day about it. Like, what an awesome situation. Like, you couldn't ask as a young quarterback to go under a better mentor than right now in the league right now than Jacoby Brissett. He's an ACC guy. You guys know him. Eric, you might have played against him. I lose track of eras, but
I was actually, how about this? I was at training camp with him. The Patriots drafted him and they asked me to snap to him. I'm like, yo, you drafted that guy in the third round. If I break his finger, I'm done. I'm done. I do not want to snap to this guy.
So you know him. I mean, he was a stud coming out of NC State. I mean, I could share stories about that visit and the people I talked to in that building about Jacoby and the type of human being he is. Drake's stepping into a great situation. But I will say, for all these young quarterbacks, all you have to do is really look at the last 5 to 10 years, the track record. These first rounders, teams figure out a way to get those guys on the field year one, whether it's the whole season or if it's, you know, the month of December, they're going to get them out there to get reps. So Drake, I think we will see Drake at some point. But I do think I'm going to go way back in the time machine now for you. But when Donovan McNabb was drafted to Philly, and I remember this. So this was, I worked in Green Bay my first year in the league, and Doug Peterson was our third string quarterback behind Brett Favre and Jim McMahon. And Andy Reid got the Philly job. He drafts Donovan. He trades for Doug and he tells Doug Peterson, listen, man, you're coming in here to take the bullets. You're going to start the season. If we're going to, you know, we could be 4-10 in the middle of December, then we can bring the young kid in and he can get some experience in year one. And the losses are already on you. That's not going, you know, the Eagles not making the playoffs is Doug Peterson's fault. We're going to pay you for it. You're going to get paid well. So then Donovan rolls into year two and he's got some starts under his belt. I think I've always thought that's the perfect formula. So I could see something like that with Drake this year. If we see, I think we'll see him, but I think we'll probably see him late. And I think we're going to see all these guys at some point.
Interesting. Okay. That's going to be fun to watch up there in New England. Of course, you got the NC State UNC situation too with our guy Jacoby Brissett. Let's stay in the first round here, Jim. Jared Verse, who we've been talking about on this podcast, it feels like years. I know he's only been at Florida State for 2 years, and the way he catapulted himself into the national conversation at FSU is really impressive, and what Mike Norvell's doing with all those draft picks they had. But he gets drafted by the Rams. Also, you have Braden Fisk go to the Rams in the second round. Maybe just hit on both those guys, both those Knowles. And just, you know, it's always interesting to think about all these guys Florida State had, and of course they're kept out of the playoff. But what kind of impact do you think Verse and Fisk can have in L.A.?
We don't have enough time on this podcast for me to talk about Braden Fisk.
that's a fact.
No, I love that's to me one of the coolest storylines of the whole draft was Fisk and Verse getting reunited, and that phone call and the Rams like picking Verse up from the airport, and you know I would love to know how fast the driver was going to get him there to the facility and get him on the phone with Verse, but no, a really cool story. Again, we had 14 straight offensive players go. You know, the fact that Leatu Latu was the first defensive player to go at 15 overall, usually the first defensive player goes somewhere in the top five. So in a normal draft without all the quarterbacks and three really good receivers and some really good O tackles, like, Verse could have been a top 10 pick. But no, so that's a really cool. Those two guys are reunited. They're going to feed off each other. Braden Fisk, to me, I mean, probably our biggest success story coming out of the Senior Bowl this year in terms of where he was projected to go when we put the roster together in November, because we've talked about it on your show before. You know, we include the NFL in our process. We have these long 3-hour phone calls and we go position by position. And because of relationships in the league, I mean, teams are generally really open about where they have guys graded. Braden Fisk was going to be like a fourth or fifth round pick going into the draft process. And he crushes it in Mobile all week. He was in, I probably in hindsight could have named him MVP of the game after I watched the tape. Unfortunately, I don't have the benefit of picking the MVP with watching the tape.
Wow.
But no, he here he goes, whatever. What did he go? Like 38, 39, 40, somewhere like that. I mean, that's for a power five player, I guess now a power four player. That's a massive jump. Like for one of those, for a power four, power five player, yeah, whatever we want to call it these days, if they do everything right through the draft process, they might go up a round, which is a lot of money when you're up there. He jumped like three or four rounds, which is a like that happens sometimes with FCS level players or a D2 kid or a D3 kid. That's sure. Not happened for a guy from Florida State. So I know I've kind of went on and on with this answer, Kelly, but that to me, that's one of the coolest stories of the draft.
No, it is, man. We love that. And I think, you know, having him on the podcast, having chatted with him throughout the year and really just his mindset, man, he's built for this stuff, right? I mean, that zero dark 30, put the tinted sunglasses on, let's go to work for this rookie season. He's got all of that. And I think he and Verse together again, it's going to be magic in LA. I can't wait to see those two and the things that they're going to be able to do. You talk about
can I cut you? Can I share one story with you from Senior Bowl week?
Please.
Okay, so we had some roster attrition. You know, before the game, we were losing some players. The D line coach for the national team calls me at 6 a.m. kind of in a panic, and I'm like, "Bro, what's going on?" He was like, "I need a D tackle. I cannot get through the game with three interior guys." I'm like, "Give me a minute." I threw my stuff out. I went to the office. I'm looking at the depth chart. Like the name that popped out on the other team, they had 60 tackles, was Braden Fisk. I'm like, you know what? It's now 7 a.m. We're playing, we're kicking off in 5 hours. Like if I'm going to switch a guy, which guy's not going to give me crap about it? So I call Braden and I'm like, or I text him. I'm like, "Hey Braden, meet me by the second floor escalators in 25 minutes. So he comes walking out of the breakfast area and I got the two D line coaches standing there with me. And he's kind of giving me that look like, what the hell's going on here? And I'm like, "Braden, you ready to make some history today, bud?" And he was like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "We're going to switch you teams."
Oh, my gosh.
And all he did was he looks at the D-line coach. He's like, "Are the calls going to be the same?" And these two guys work together with the Dolphins. He's like, they're like, "Yeah, the calls will be the same." He was like, "All right, I'm good. Let's play." He's like, I don't give a crap. I'll just play."
Wow.
So, I mean, that's him, man. Yeah. Like, that is him. Like, you talked about zero dark 30. Like, this dude is just, he's a warrior.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, you talk about adversity and, hey, got to go, baby. Got to switch. Got to make it happen. He's tremendous.
He played his butt off. It was incredible.
Bomb. I mean, it's just, he's a great player. It's fun to watch. And that's an awesome story. Thank you for sharing that, because it's something people just wouldn't know, you know, without you sharing right there. We talk about some movement. We talk about some sliding. And I love that what we were talking about pre-conversation here about the media's mindset versus the actual NFL kind of GM and scouts and things of that nature. Where is the disconnect and how does the disconnect be created? Because there is examples of guys throughout this entire draft that maybe thought they were first, second round picks that slid to the fifth, sixth, seventh round even. Where is the disconnect in your mind?
Yeah, I got to be careful here with how I answer this, Eric. Like, I'm all about draft content, right? Because that's what we do for the Senior Bowl. Like, if it feeds the draft engine, then I'm usually good with it. but these way too early mock drafts, I just feel it can be dangerous. Because I've seen it. I've seen it with these players. I've talked to them about it. They buy into it. They if they're not looking at it, a friend is looking at it, a family member's looking at it, and they're in their ear about it. So this stuff is going to be put out tomorrow, probably. We'll see some way too early 2025 mock drafts tomorrow. We're taping here on Sunday. It'll be Monday. So again, it happens with a bunch of players every single year.
Yeah.
You know, they get put up in these mock first round drafts, then you get to draft day. And then, unfortunately, then the narrative becomes that they fell.
Right.
And they slid. And then the assumption is the kid did something wrong, because nobody's going to talk about, oh, well, I misevaluated him. I got the player wrong.
Right.
It had to have been something else. He must have a character issue that I don't know about, because there's no way that he sort of slid that far, because I know what I'm looking at. The teams don't know what they're looking at. I know what I'm looking at. So it had to be a medical thing or a character thing I didn't know about. And then it puts the kids in the player in the crosshairs that, you know, people are thinking, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what did he do? Does he have an off the field issue? Does he have bad football makeup? So it's just, again, I love that people are into the draft. I love that they create content. But these ones, and my last point in that, not to go off on too long of a tangent on the early mock drafting, if you're doing your job right for the 2024 draft, you should have been doing it right up until this past weekend. You shouldn't have had time to look at the 2025 players and evaluate
that. That's right.
Let's get 2024 right first. You know, like, what are you doing throwing out a mock 2 days later?
But again,
I understand that the ESPNs of the world and NFL networks, they want that content and they make their guys put them out. But again, none of these guys have watched enough 2020, these players for next year to do that. But anyway, I'm done ranting.
You know what? I'm ready for like a 2035 way too early mock draft. And we're looking at 10-year-olds. Like, let's really get into
it.
All right.
If we
let's look at my son's class. He's one this week. Let's break it down. Jim, speaking, this guy didn't really fall. I think for Mac and I, we just think he should have gone higher, because we've been so exposed to him. We know how great he is. Arguably the best defensive player in football last year in Peyton Wilson from NC State. He ends up going 98th overall, third round, to the Steelers, which I think might be a great fit for him. And it's all about fit. We know that. But what's your overall eval of Peyton Wilson, and what do you make of him going in the third round?
Yeah, I loved him, and that was all medical. And the only reason I share that is because it's pretty well known. You know, like, I don't like talking about players' medical situations. That's sensitive to me. Like, Eric, if you had stuff, I just don't. Yeah, I'm sure you, as a former player, man, like, you don't love getting into that stuff.
Sure.
That's not. But it was, everyone knew about it. It was so well publicized. Right. He missed time early in his career. He had the stuff. If it weren't for that, he would have been a first round draft pick.
Wow.
That's really what it was. And now that there's reports out there of the severity of a knee injury and whatnot, all I know is when you cut on the NC State tape, he's super instinctive. He's incredibly fast, and he plays his butt off.
Yeah.
So, like, he's going to be around the ball and that Pittsburgh Steelers defense. He could win Defensive Rookie of the Year as a third round pick.
Wow.
That's what I think of him. In that defense and the style they play, I mean, he's just. You guys watched him.
Yeah.
I mean, they were ripping off his stats on the draft coverage. And he's one of those guys, he's a stat sheet filler, like every single category, tackles, TFLs, interceptions, PBUs, sacks. I mean, this guy can do everything at the linebacker position. So if he were a clean medical, I think he would have been like the rare off-the-ball linebacker that would have gone in the first round.
Yeah, and walk us through that a little bit, Jim, because it is such a just an interesting thing, because you've been in those rooms, you've been in those conversations. And as a scout, as a former player, whatever you want to look, however lens, and you see it on film, and you're like, my God, when this guy is healthy, he's so good, and doing all these things. How much is it like back and forth? Are there some people that are in there like, who cares? Take him, like, it's worth the risk type of deal. What are those conversations like when you have something that maybe is hanging up a little bit of a concern about a guy?
Well, as a scout, it's your job to grade the player. Your job is to grade the tape. It's the medical staff's job to evaluate the medical, right? After that's all done, and the GM, it's a small circle decision-making crew that meets with the docs. And then after they'll come in to the, then they'll report back to the scouting staff. Listen, guys, this is where, you know, Peyton came out. It's going to be a tough call for us. And then, you know, then you start to have those conversations for sure. I always use the Brett Favre example on this when we're talking about medical stuff, just to like highlight what a roll of the dice it is. So when Brett was coming out of Southern Miss, you know, he'd been in a really bad car accident. I think it was before his senior year, where he had like half his intestines taken out. And I mean, there were teams that medically failed Brett Favre. So gets drafted in the first round by the Falcons, has a tough year. Ron Wolf loved this guy in the draft. He saw an opportunity to kind of swoop in and make a trade for Brett Favre with the Atlanta Falcons. And he does it. You know, he wants to put this trade through. Well, the medical people step in the way it was told to me. And they were like, Ron, you can't make this trade. Like, wow, we failed this guy last year on his medical. And Ron was like, listen, it's my job on the line. I'm making the trade.
Wow. And
we saw how that turned out. Brett Favre was the all-time Iron Man. He started like 280 straight games. So, again, all the medical stuff, it's just kind of a roll of the dice. And I'm sure for the Pittsburgh Steelers, it was the risk-reward. Here we are. We're sitting at the end of the third round. Let's take a shot, guys.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, if it doesn't pan out, we're all on the same page. You know, because but if the medical holds up, we know we're getting a great player.
Right.
And if it doesn't, you know what? We took our shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're gonna gamble on draft weekend.
For sure.
And I think that was a pretty smart gamble.
Yeah. Jeez Louise. Man, that's
what
it's
do doctors
insane.
Know
and
anyway.
It's fun to see. That's right. What do they know? What do they know? All right, we've got two more first rounders, and then I do want to jump into some more war room stories and hear about the different things that go on there. But when I look at this next guy, and Graham Barton, you know, just an absolute freak of nature from Duke. Big Graham.
Max obsessed
you know, a
with
guy
him.
That
let's
started
just put
his,
it, let's say it real.
I am obsessed with him. I am obsessed with him because he's a heck of a player. Started his career center, played at left tackle for the following, you know, years, was an All-American, you know, runs a 4.8 at his pro day, and then goes first round to the Bucks. When you have a guy that's that versatile, just from a general O-line perspective in the NFL, how do you decide where to start him? I remember you and I having this conversation a couple of years ago with Zion Johnson on where he was going to start out positionally. But how do you have a guy that has that much range when you talk about tackle guard or center on where to start him?
Well, I think you need to, and I'm with you. I'm in the Graham Barton fan club myself. So I got my pom-poms out for Barton as well. But I think you need to identify what position you think his highest ceiling is at. To me, that's center. And then you approach it. Okay, where do we need him right now? You know, where's the immediate need? If it's at guard right now, let's play him at right guard. And then when whatever, I'm just hypothetical right now. You know, like if you're right guards and you think it's going to be his last year with the club, your center's in his last year. You play Graham at right guard for a year, and then you move him into center when the center moves on. So he gives you flexibility, but you do want to identify, you know, where is this guy going to hit his ceiling? To me, at center. I'll share a quick story on Graham too. You know, Riley Leonard is a local guy for us. He's from Fairhope, Alabama, down here, the quarterback from Duke. And I was on Twitter last summer. Shocker, right? I'm on Twitter, but I saw that Riley was having his football camp down in Fairhope, and Graham was there. So I just DM'd. I didn't have either of their numbers. So I DM'd them, and I'm like, hey, guys, I'd love to catch up for dinner or something tonight. So we went to dinner. I went to dinner with those two guys, talked about the Senior Bowl. Barton was fired up about it. I told him we'd rep him at center a bunch during the week. Like, I literally called my wife leaving the restaurant. I said, honey, if you want to feel good about the future of America and the next generation, like, have dinner with Riley Leonard and Graham Barton. Yes. Like, these two guys are absolute studs. I think Graham Barton's going to be a all pro level player for the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really good to hear. And we've had both on the podcast. I would completely agree. Riley, of course, moving on to Notre Dame, but we don't have to get into that. Happy for him. Let's talk about the last guy in the first round, Nate Wiggins, who, as Mac and I, you know, have followed Clemson quite closely. One of the first things I think about with Nate Wiggins, and I hate to admit this, is the Wake Forest game in Winston-Salem, where there were probably 150 points scored, and it felt like all of the passes were completed on Nate Wiggins. Like, it was rough. And that was Sam Hartman, who was quarterback for Wake at that time. And just the improvement that Nate Wiggins has made since that game is tremendous to make himself into a first round pick. If you had told me that during that game, I don't think I would have believed you. So how do you feel, Jim, Nate's been able to kind of turn that around and then become a first round pick for the Ravens?
Yeah, I will. You know, I'm always transparent with everybody. Mm-hmm. I probably did less work on Wiggins than anybody because it was pretty clear from the get go that we weren't going to get him in Mobile. Had he come out, I definitely would have wanted him, and I'd seen enough where we did want him. But you know, I think that game you're talking about, I love when corners show they can bounce back.
Yeah.
You know, like some guys, you lose them, and they just, I mean, shoot, Eric, you might have played with guys like that. I mean, you have a couple rough patches in your career, and you lose confidence, and you're never the same guy again. So he showed that he's got that mental bounce back, and that's a great trait. And then the guy runs freaking 4.2 whatever. So, I mean, he's got that oh crap speed when he needs it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's critical. It's critical to have that. So he's got the mental makeup for it. He's got the speed for it. He's played in a great program. He's gotten better over the course of his career. Mm-hmm. The Ravens, I mean, Marlon Humphrey, I mean, they've got a good track record of drafting, you know, young corners and developing them. So I think that's a good landing spot for Nate.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Excited for him because we all know fit is such a vital piece of this whole thing that just if you can get a guy in a situation where he can grow and just really be able to go from the ground running, you love that and you love to see it. Two more questions for you, non-player base, and we'll get you out of here, Jim. Really grateful for your time. I do want to jump back into the war room because I think it's so fascinating. Yeah. On draft day and throughout the 3 day and the weekend and all those different things. Talk to me about this. Why does it take 20 seconds to put your pick in and other teams take that full allotment to do their thing? What's up with the discrepancy and why maybe is it one way or the other?
Usually when they're running it right up, they want to show conviction in the pick.
Yeah.
you know, like they don't, that he's the, they have their guy, they're, it would take a ridiculous trade offer. I'll go all the way back to the Randy Moss pick in Minnesota. So I was working with a coach at the time, was really good friends with Denny Green, and Denny Green would seek out this coach's counsel quite a bit. And he said, you know, he was talking to this guy I worked for about Randy and what happens if Randy falls to us. And he said, if Randy falls to you, run the freaking card up. Because, you know, he had some character stuff coming out and you have to make it look like, you know what, we're good.
Yeah.
Like that's like we're good with Randy Moss. There was no waffling. He's our guy. So I always remember that story. And then when they do use the whole clock, usually it's waiting on a trade scenario.
Interesting.
You know,
okay.
They're going to exhaust it. Like you have your player, you've called it in, you know, you've called it into your guy in this year, Detroit. He writes down the guy and he'll just say, you know, he'll tell the guy the name. He'll write down the name. He'll be like, we'll call you back when it's time to run it up.
Wow. How about that?
And you're just waiting. You're waiting for that to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's usually the discrepancy.
Okay. Okay. And how about this one? If a guy does slide, and we've talked about that a ton, you know, perception versus reality there. But if a guy does slide and a team that maybe was in front of you that you thought was going to take him, doesn't take him. And then he's there and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is here. But is there any reservation when you're like, well, why is this guy here? You know, what? Why is he here? Right. And then does that make you make, you know, double decisions or whatever? Does that ever happen?
It shouldn't.
Okay.
Because really the last 2 weeks are strategy sessions. That's all it is. Like the board said, the evals are done. You've heard from the coaching staff. They've weighed in. Now you're just running millions of scenarios. Every possible scenario, you're trying to play that out. And it's not necessarily like mock drafts, but it's like, it's more situation.
Sure.
Like, how is this thing going to fall? I'll say this for example, in this year's draft, like say you liked a Michigan player and the Chargers were picking ahead of you and Jim Harbaugh passed on that Michigan player and he was projected to go right in that range, right? And you're like, well, crap, what does Harbaugh know that right. We don't know? You know, right. That might give you a little bit of pause right there. But no, you just have to trust in your work. there's so much work's already been done by the time you get to April. Like, you just got to trust in all the information you have.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Golly. Well, dude, this was so much fun. You're the best as always. We're grateful for your time. Get out of the basement. Go hang out with your family. You've done enough for us.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Jim Nagy for joining us. He really is the best, and I know he's got a lot of media requests and interviews, so we appreciate him taking time for us in his mom's basement, which is excellent. And Mac, I really just have one thing left to say, and it's no ring, no couch.
That's perfect. That's a great way to close this episode, KG, because as you said, Jim is the best, and we're so grateful for his time. Thank you, Molly, for setting it all up and making this happen. And you heard it, guys. Listen, mamas, pay attention. Take notes from this young mama right here, okay? No ring, no couch. And no subscription, no likey by Eric and Kelly. So help us out. Guys, go over to the YouTube channel, subscribe, leave some comments. Tell us about your guys. There's so many guys that were drafted this past weekend from the ACC. We didn't have enough time to talk about all of them. Jump in the comments. Let's go back and forth and talk about some of those guys, the upside that you're going to see from some of them. It's going to be a lot of fun to just see and see what happens in the years to come. Big shout out to Ingles. And of course, big shout out to our OGs over on Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe there as well. We would greatly appreciate that. But until next time, we'll see you.